Hello and welcome back to Easy Being Green, lessons in sustainable business for SMEs. This is episode 5 and it's a doozy. I so enjoyed creating this conversation with this incredible human, Dr. Jennifer Kuklinski. She is a professor, an author, an impact coach. She is a diversity, inclusion, sustainability expert. She is the founder of 3P Insights. Oh, and that's just the beginning. She has 2 masters and a PhD. She is a professor. The list just goes on and on. You can see why I was super excited. And also, I will admit, a little bit nervous to talk to Jennifer because I admire her so much and they say, never meet your heroes, but I'm glad that I met this one. We covered a lot of ground on this conversation. We spoke about Jennifer's journey to where she is today. We spoke about her business, 3P Insights, and what problem it is intending to solve. We talked a lot about words like sustainability and purpose and the corresponding greenwashing and purpose washing that go with those, the overuse of those words. We talked about content in marketing and how we can adopt a less is more approach, which is better for people and the planet. And of course, as I always ask all of our guests on this pod, I also asked Jennifer whether she thought there is such a thing as a truly sustainable business yet. I really hope you enjoy listening to this conversation as much as I enjoyed recording it. Hi, Jennifer. It's so lovely to have you here today. Thank you so much for coming on Easy Being Green.
Thank you for having me, Charlie. It's wonderful to be connected with you on here, and I can't wait to chat today.
Fantastic. So we met in rather, I like to say a millennial way. I don't know if it is a millennial way, but it feels that way to me. And that was via the medium of Instagram. And you commented on some things on Earth Collective's Instagram, which we're always very grateful for. But I then did a little bit of stalking of you. And once I'd overcome my absolute jealousy of the beautiful place that you live in, with the snow everywhere, it looks like a fairyland. I had this overwhelming feeling of connection to you from all the way over here in the UK and to your mission. And it seems that there's a few things that connect us in terms of the things we love. We both paddleboard, we both love the outdoors, and we're both working to support businesses navigate their journey towards sustainability. But then I dug a little bit deeper, such a stalker, and I found out you have 2 masters, a PhD, you're a professor, an author, and a diversity, inclusion, and sustainability expert. And what I love, it says on your Instagram, a sustainability optimist. I love that. You're also the founder of 3P Insights, and that's just the start of the list. So to start us off today, I just would really love, Jennifer, to know about your journey and what got you to where you are today.
So first of all, thank you for that really warm introduction. It's so cool to be able to connect with people like you on Instagram. Honestly, I can't believe the amazing people I've met through this platform. And definitely, I think we have a lot in common, right? And that's the really cool thing about social media is that, you know, you can find people with similar interests, but also wildly different backgrounds. So I find all of that quite exciting. In terms of my background, it's quite diverse and a bit unconventional. So in terms of the beauty of nature, I grew up and now live again in one of the most pristine regions of the U.S., which is the border region of Michigan's Upper Peninsula and northern Wisconsin. So living here and especially, you know, growing up here before I moved and, you know, moving away and seeing sort of the lack of that beauty in other parts of the country and even the world, and then coming back, I think has afforded me you know, a really incredible access to, you know, nature and nature's value. But I, you know, here we get to enjoy all four seasons. So, I mean, there's a lot of beautiful places in the world, of course. But like you mentioned right now, there's a lot of snow and we've had a lot of snow for about 6 months. So we do have very long and snowy winters, but it, you know, they really are sort of a winter wonderland, but we also have like amazing summers. Where I live, people always say, you know, you move here for the winter, right? Because there's all of this sort of white capital, as people will say, right? There's, you know, this beautiful white snow cover. You can ski, snowboard, you know, cross-country ski, Nordic ski, snowshoe, right? All of these amazing things, but they stay here for the summer because the summers here are just incredible. And so you mentioned paddleboarding. So absolutely. You know, I love paddleboarding, love getting out on the water, especially Lake Superior, which I post a lot about in the summer on Instagram. But I really think that living here has sort of created a way for me to learn about, you know, the intrinsic value of nature and has ingrained in me a sense that I need to protect or at least help protect. I can't do it alone, yeah. Right? But I need to help protect these lands and the ecosystems and, you know, people that they support. But I've also been really passionate about social justice issues as well. I went to college in Minnesota for my undergrad, and I majored in political science and international relations. So I wasn't always in business, although my parents are small business owners. So I've been surrounded by business my whole life. But I started in politics, and I felt like that was where, you know, I could really make an impact working in government and sort of that political and international relations space. And that's where I really took interest in sort of the social, political, and cultural issues that you know, our world faces. Mm-hmm. I also joined the military when I was 18, and that gave me a whole new perspective on global problems, as well as sort of our role, you know, in helping overcome them. But I, you know, I had sort of this environmental, you know, values, I should say. And then I had sort of these social values. And so I did my first master's in international security, and I focused on climate security. And then I have an MBA, like you mentioned, in environmental management and sustainability, and my PhD is in international development. And so I feel like all of this sort of holistic, you know, understanding of environmental and social issues has, you know, afforded me the ability to really become a holistic sustainability expert. You mentioned that I also, you know, have a background in diversity, equity, and inclusion. Mm-hmm. And that actually, I started learning about and researching diversity and inclusion in my undergrad. I was part of an organization called Communicating Common Ground. Mm-hmm. And we worked with community partners and especially educational institutions to try to sort of bridge the cultural gap between, you know, people of very diverse backgrounds, of course, in the US, right? It's an incredibly diverse country. And so even at a very young age, I was interested in that. But then in my PhD program, I was offered a fellowship with an organization called Humanity in Action, absolutely fantastic international educational nonprofit organization. And there they asked us to research and publish on, you know, matters related to diversity and inclusion. So I think that really solidified sort of my expertise. I was then asked by Emerald Publishing out of the UK to write a book on diversity and organizational development, which I did, and it was published last summer. So that was a life goal of mine.
Yes, that's huge. Amazing.
So it was wonderful, but I'm still really, really drawn to the environmental stuff too, right? As you can tell, if you follow any of my social media. You know, so interweaving sort of the environmental and social justice pieces, and then coming kind of back to my roots in business, you know, my parents are business owners. I grew up, you know, with this kind of just business surrounding, if you will, right? Small business owners, you know, stick together. They kind of form a community. And so I've been a part of that community, and I sort of came back to that in my PhD program. And especially as I became a professor at Northland College, which is an environmental liberal arts college in northern Wisconsin. And so that really gave me sort of the platform to, you know, bring all of these pieces of sustainability together and apply them to, you know, a business context. As you mentioned, I also do run my company, 3P Insights, and I offer training, consulting, coaching, and networking services related to the three pillars of sustainability: people, planet, and profit. And so I do write all of this, and actually just am moving into a public policy position with a company focused on the clean energy transition. So I'll actually just be doing affiliate professor work moving forward after this year, and moving back kind of into that government business nexus in my new public policy position. So it's really exciting times, but yeah, I kind of do a lot of different things, but it all revolves around sustainability.
What a portfolio. I just have to take a deep breath. That's such a absolutely incredible. And honestly, finding some time to come to talk to me today, I'm not sure how you did it, but yeah, incredible portfolio and clearly the right person that I should be talking to. It was interesting what you were saying there about being in nature and how much that influences the way we think about the world. At the moment, I'm in the middle of the moors in rural Southwest England, and we were just talking when we were out walking the dog this morning about living here would be lovely, but in the winter you'd need a 4x4 because it's really snowy and icy. And then we said, but it doesn't anymore because the climate's changing. It actually isn't how bad, you know, which is we love the snow and we love the four seasons, but it's not as bad as it used to be. And I have this notion that you were talking about working in politics and policy change. So many of our politicians live in cities, in concrete jungles. And I feel like when you don't touch nature on a regular basis, you forget that it is all that there is. You know, you could take everything else away and this nature still provides. I've just gone off in a complete tangent there, but that's what I was thinking about when you were talking about coming home to Wisconsin.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I've lived in, you know, big cities. And I mean, for 10 years, I lived in, you know, larger cities. I lived kind of all over the US and in a few other countries. And, you know, I don't know that I could ever go back. And I absolutely think that my ability to immerse myself in nature, literally by walking out of my door, is something that's really important, and keeps me sort of grounded in, you know, why we do this work, especially on the environmental sustainability side.
Yeah, absolutely. And everyone listening, I'll put Jennifer's Instagram in our show notes. Please go and have a look, because gosh, some of the videos you post are just absolutely beautiful. Let's talk more about 3P Insights. So what inspired you? You said a little bit there about what inspired you to found the business. Well, what problem are you trying to solve with it?
Yeah. So as a professor of business, I've had, you know, several business owners over the years reach out to me for support here and there. Actually, before I moved into academia, I was working in an economic nonprofit, and I was working with business services. So helping small businesses, especially, but some medium-sized businesses, you know, just with lots of different business challenges. And so I had some of those folks who's, you know, still knew me, that would reach out, you know, years later for support. But I, you know, I was helping these businesses just sort of here and there, you know, some with a business plan, some just wanted some general insights, you know, to help get their business started. Some wanted more comprehensive support, like overcoming financial challenges or barriers, or even help with strategic planning, which would be sort of the high level, you know, business support services I provide. And I've had larger corporations reach out to me for training, seminars, and workshops, as well as support with their sustainability strategy. And so I had been doing this type of work on and off for about 4 years in my professorship capacity, and then, you know, even longer in my nonprofit management, you know, role before I moved into academia. Mm-hmm. And finally in 2020, when we all seem to have a little bit more time on our hands due to lockdowns and social distancing, I decided to put all of my services that I had been doing already under one umbrella, but really dive into that focus on sustainable organizational development. And so obviously as a scholar in sustainable business, I was seeing an increased need for support for businesses in terms of, you know, how to run their business efficiently while also making a bigger impact than simply earning a profit. Mm-hmm. And of course, if anyone is following this space, right, we know that the data suggests that this is the way forward in business, and those businesses that don't prioritize sustainable practices or purpose-driven impact will be left behind. So, you know, business owners and leaders across the globe are realizing that sustainable business is good business. Mm-hmm. And with a growing number of conscious consumers, sustainability is a competitive advantage. But a lot of business owners don't know how to get there. Mm-hmm. So I help them with that. I provide, you know, consulting services for large and small businesses, ranging from solopreneurs to multi-million dollar corporations. Mm-hmm. I provide one-on-one coaching services as well, mostly to small businesses and startups. And I offer training like workshops and webinars for businesses trying to educate their workforce on issues related to sustainability and inclusion. I also do some of that training for nonprofits as well, but I would say businesses are my primary clients. But one thing I realized after talking with loads of smaller businesses is that there isn't always a budget for one-on-one consulting or coaching support. Mm-hmm. And I also don't take on a lot of clients at one time because I do have a full-time job. Yeah. So, right. So I created, in response to sort of that need or that problem of needing affordable information about how to improve the impacts in your business, I created the 3P Insights Learning Library, which includes video tutorials, workshops, webinars, and full courses actually related to business management and strategy, as well as a great deal of information on impact related topics like sustainability, wellness, and diversity, equity, and inclusion. I also offer some networking and community building opportunities through the library. And my vision was sort of, you know, let's create this virtual space, mm-hmm. where it kind of mirrors your community library, right? You can go in there, you can learn, research, right, at your own pace, on your own time. You can access, you know, resources to help you improve your just business more generally, right? Your business outcomes more broadly, but also, you know, that sustainability, that impact-driven focus too. And so my thought was that let's kind of mirror what a library looks like, allow people to, you know, access the materials. And then with every video, you know, tutorial I have or webinar or workshop, or even courses, I have additional resources. So I have workbooks in there, I have handouts, I have links to, you know, more resources that can help, you know, you gain the knowledge you need to improve the impacts of your business. And, you know, through this, I think that it's been really cool to see how helpful it's been, you know, by having kind of this one-stop shop for business owners. So one thing that one of my clients told me was that, you know, there's too much information out there, right? Mm. So, I mean, you might not be able to find all of the information I have in the library somewhere else, because obviously as a professor of business, I have a vast research background and I always have my sort of impact-driven twist, yeah. Even to the basic stuff like email marketing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can find a lot of information out there, but there's so much information. And unfortunately, there's some bad information as well, mm-hmm. right? There's, you know, tips from, you know, management experts, right? Or professionals that, you know, might guide you in the wrong direction, especially if you're a business that wants to, you know, make a positive impact on people and the planet. And so it's, you know, it's kind of that one-stop shop that gives you an outlet, right? You don't have to go looking elsewhere. I've done all the research for you, and I bring in other experts as well. So it's not just me creating this content. And that was sort of my vision, right? Allow people to learn on their own time and make incremental improvements, you know, as they're able to.
Excellent. You're so right about the internet, right? It's an amazing resource tool, research tool that we have had for most of, I came, you know, came of age while the internet was becoming a thing.
Right. But
I remember when we used to do, I don't know if it's the same for you, but we used to look on like encyclopedias and Britannica and things like that. That was the extent of it. And now there's just, you can find everything on the internet, and it can be, if you don't think critically, you can find the wrong thing, or you can find something to back up your point, no matter what your point is. There'll be a piece of research out there that will agree with you, and it can be a bit dangerous. And the other side of it, I think, as a small business owner is who's trying to be on their journey towards sustainability or making positive impact, is trying to do the right thing in your business with things like you say, email marketing, Facebook, social media, like utilizing resources, and you just having somebody like yourself to talk to who understands that side of it, rather than just a generalized business expert, or having those resources in your library, I can imagine can be super helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the other thing that I find with some of the information out there is that it's driven from one person's perspective in their one business, which definitely has value. But, you know, I think the value that I try to bring is I've read about thousands of businesses, right? All different sizes. I've done the research. And so when I tell someone something, it's not based on, I mean, if they want to know my perspective, which mm-hmm. I'll probably share with you some of my personal perspective today, but, you know, I can certainly give that to people. And of course would share that, but I'm sharing knowledge and information from a broad perspective, right? So if we look at 1,000 businesses, what are the lessons learned? Mm-hmm. And those are the lessons that are really going to help business owners make an impact, because one person's experience in their one business is possibly not going to be applicable to you if you have a different target market, if you operate in a different, you know, geographical context, or a different market altogether, or a different industry, right? Some of those lessons can be broadly applied, but some cannot. And so, you know, as a researcher in the field, I think it's really important to give people information that has been tested, right? Mm. And sort of proven through the research.
It can be so stressful as well, because you're looking at what other people are doing, or somebody posts an amazing case study of a campaign that's worked really well from them. And you're like, well, why isn't this working for me? But like you say, there are some things that broadly apply across multiple businesses, and some things just will work for some people and not for other businesses. So yeah, I totally see where you're going.
Yeah, absolutely.
So a discussion I've had a lot recently, and I'm sure you've had the same, is about the word sustainability. We've said it a lot in this in this podcast, in this interview already, and it's been out there, hashtagged, used in marketing materials, slapped onto ranges that come out for mainstream fashion brands. It's been so overused and misused that it feels like we don't know what it means anymore, and we feel like it's being greenwashed. You can say you're sustainable now. And I think, like you say, consumers are being really savvy. They know what they want. People want good things for the planet. They're demanding that, and which is a great thing, because we can be more discerning in how we take that word on board when it's slapped onto a brand. And we've seen brands like Oatly and Innocent, two brands, have recently had adverts banned over misleading environmental claims and been accused of greenwashing in that sense.
That's a really great point. It's interesting. For the last several months, I've actually been working with a strategic planning task force at an environmentally focused organization mm-hmm. on the development of new mission, vision, and values statements. You know, so they're sort of in their 5-year strategic review and, you know, setting forth sort of a 10-year plan, which includes a new direction, if you will. And during the discussions about mission, some of the folks on the task force felt that the word sustainable should be used while others did not. So some felt it should be used in the mission statement, some felt it shouldn't. Now for this particular organization, sustainability, especially environmental sustainability, but even, you know, sort of the social and economic justice piece is really woven into the fabric of this organization. But those that were against using the word sustainability felt that the word was perceived in too many different ways to be impactful if included in the mission statement. You know, they in essence thought that the term has lost its meaning and that including, you know, sustainability would just become another buzzword. But I push back on this a bit. While I do see people throw out their own definitions of sustainable or sustainability, which really is a pet peeve of mine. as a researcher, right? We like concrete definitions. So if someone throws out their own definition of sustainable or sustainability, that doesn't mean that there isn't a concrete and a correct definition. Mm-hmm. In fact, sustainable development was defined by the United Nations back in 1987 as, you know, development that meets the needs of the present world without, you know, compromising the ability of future generations to meet their own needs. Mm-hmm. And while this definition does offer a lot of flexibility in terms of interpretation, the field of sustainability, sustainable business, has established that sustainability holistically involves a balanced commitment to an organization's economic, environmental, and social bottom lines. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that as an educator in this space, I feel personally responsible to help bring awareness to the fact that this word does have a concrete meaning. And just because some person or some business has a different interpretation of the term, that doesn't mean that their interpretation is correct. And it doesn't mean that that word is meaningless. If we want to make progress on any issue, whether it's social, environmental, or economic, we need to have a shared understanding of the problem. Mm-hmm. And concrete definitions provide that foundational understanding. So it's important that we recognize that, you know, sustainability does have a proper definition, and that definition provides the grounding we need to make progress toward achieving the sustainable development goals. Mm-hmm. And I think this is where a lot of organizations get in trouble. Most often I see a business or even a nonprofit or educational organization focus on one aspect of sustainability. You know, maybe they only focus on environmental sustainability, but then they tout themselves in their marketing materials or just the way they speak about themselves, right, as a sustainable business or organization. But this is misleading because making one small change doesn't make your organization sustainable.
Right.
And I am a firm believer in progress over perfection, and that any progress in improving social or environmental outcomes is good. Mm-hmm. But the problem of greenwashing arises when businesses market themselves as environmentally sustainable when that status hasn't quite been reached by them. Mm-hmm. And so being a truly sustainable organization means that, you know, you've taken a look at your entire value chain. Mm-hmm. And you've maximized the positive and minimized the negative economic, environmental, and social impacts involved with producing or using your goods and services. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that ranges from the materials sourced to operations, right? Your daily operations to the end of life product considerations, right? What happens to your good when people are done using it? And so to that end, you know, greenwashing really only covers misleading environmental claims, which, as you noted, you know, are increasingly being highlighted, right, by consumers when an environmental claim is misleading. But greenwashing is just one part of a bigger problem of color washing. And, you know, there's many ways that businesses, unfortunately, market themselves as socially or environmentally responsible when, in fact, they aren't.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. The same thing with purpose. We're seeing purpose-driven brands, purpose-driven organizations. What does it mean? What does purpose mean? What do you think it means in business? And how can businesses avoid falling into this trap of purpose washing and green color washing, like as you so eloquently put it?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. You know, we've been hearing the word, you know, greenwashing a lot. I think we don't hear, you know, the broader color washing terms like blue washing, pink washing, purple washing quite as much, although they're happening just as often. Mm-hmm. But we are starting to hear this term purpose washing, right? And I think you may have read one of my recent impact articles where, you know, I actually asked the question whether purpose is, you know, the buzzword of the 21st century. And what I found is, in fact, purpose has become a management buzzword over the last decade. So just to give you some statistics, since 2010, the word purpose has appeared in the titles of more than 400 leadership and business books, as well as thousands of articles. And so we know that it's in, you know, increasing in popularity, and there's good reason for that. If you actually can establish a well-defined purpose that actually does drive, you know, decision-making and motivate behavior in your organization, mm-hmm. your organization will be more successful. That's what the data shows us. But, you know, that's led to a lot of businesses sort of jumping on the purpose-driven bandwagon, mm-hmm. so to speak. And unfortunately, you know, the majority of those companies still don't really have a well-defined purpose or purpose statement. Some of them have developed purpose statements, but they misrepresent the actual nature of their business. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you read a typical purpose statement, you'll likely find highly aspirational, but incredibly vague statements like change the world or make a difference in people's lives. You know, strategy thought leaders have explained that statements like these sort of miss the heart of what drives a successful business. Mm-hmm. They don't tell us anything about what the business actually does or who it serves. Mm-hmm. And, you know, also suggesting that one business can itself change the world, it of course is misleading, right? We mm-hmm. can't do it. Yeah. Achieving a more sustainable world, creating a more sustainable world requires partnerships and everyone to do their part. One organization cannot do it alone. Yeah. And so one of my favorite quotes about purpose was actually published in the Harvard Business Review's article titled, Why Are We Here? Mm-hmm. And the article was written by two professors of strategy from Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management. And they said, a great purpose statement is of limited use if your firm cannot execute on it. And so, you know, consumers are increasingly drawn to these brands and businesses that have a purpose beyond profit, especially those that are interested in more sustainable goods and services. Mm-hmm. And businesses have responded with those idyllic, right, statements that they can never actually implement or measure in practice, mm-hmm. either because, you know, the statement is too lofty for one business to act on in any measurable way, or because actually implementing that purpose is way beyond the scope of their capabilities or resources. Right. And so I think that's why so many businesses are accused of purpose washing. And I think that it's unintentional in many cases. Mm. Of course, there are unfortunately some businesses and brands that have drafted purpose statements with little or no intent to execute on them. Mm-hmm. And that is a bigger problem, right, of purpose washing. You know, when this happens, though, even if it's unintentional purpose washing or intentional purpose washing, there is a very real risk that, you know, purpose is going to be seen as inauthentic or just another business buzzword, as you've mentioned.
Absolutely. It's so interesting. I worked in PR and communications for a decade, based out of Sydney in Australia. And it kind of reminds me a little bit of, I used to write mission statements for brands, and I won't say which brands, I don't want to throw anybody under the bus, but sometimes it was all about the words and sounding good. It feels fairly similar, but in a much scarier way, because this is when we're talking about purpose in the in the realm of sustainability and creating a better future for everyone. You know, it's not just a mission statement, which is something to, you know, about your brand, and people see it as a bit of a marketing tool perhaps, but when it's about purpose and there's no backup behind it, that can be, like you say, quite dangerous, because it's not, you're then spending money on your business and you're doing things and you're convincing people of certain ways that you're acting, and there's actually nothing solid behind that, which is kind of scary. But I wanted to ask you why this is happening. Like, are these buzzwords, are they coming about because of the consumer demand? We're, you know, people calling out, well, human demand, I prefer to say. I hate calling people consumers, because we're human beings, calling out brands and businesses and saying, hang on a minute, your range of eco wear in one range in your whole, I was always quote fashion brands for this one because it's the easiest one, the one range of eco wear in your whole outfit of products, what about all the rest of them? You know, where's the sustainability in that? So do you think that that's pushing brands to try and have a purpose without really understanding what that means?
Yes, I think so. And I think we're seeing this happen for two reasons. One is, of course, as you've noted, you know, consumers, or humans, right, people who buy things, are, you know, as well as other interested parties, right? So the people who buy our products aren't the only constituents that we have to be, you know, cognizant of or responsible to. You know, it might be policymakers that are demanding changes, or nonprofit organizations that are, you know, shining a light on our unethical or unsustainable practices. But these people are demanding, you know, more transparency, and they do want to see purpose beyond profit. And so that's part of it. I think the other part of it, though, and this is probably the more well-intentioned piece of it, is there's a wide body of research that is showing that if you have a really well-founded purpose in your organization, your employees, you know, which are also, you know, important, interested, you know, constituents in your market, right? Your employees will be more motivated. And so that's, I think, the other piece, that it's sort of an employee motivation thing that businesses are trying to capitalize on too, you know, if they have employees. Of course, if you're a solopreneur, it's really just motivating yourself and, you know, the people who might buy your goods and services. But if you have employees, purpose can be a really good motivator. But that's only if your purpose is really woven into the DNA of your business. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where a lot of businesses and even other organizations, but I think businesses are having a harder time with it. You know, with nonprofits, you're sort of inherently purpose driven. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, that's why you get a lot of people interested in working in the nonprofit world, even if, you know, salaries aren't as high as the business world, because they have this really deep-rooted purpose. Yeah. But businesses are starting to recognize that, but they don't weave it in to their DNA, right? They do things that go against this purpose that they've said they stand for, you know, and is the meaning behind their brand, their reason for being. And so that's where I think it really starts to unravel. In some cases, you have really well-intentioned, you know, purpose statements. And in other cases, you have deceptive purpose statements, right? Let's just use the buzzwords to attract people to buy our goods. But even when it's well-intentioned, it often unravels because it's just not deeply interwoven into the strategy and the everyday, right, day-to-day operations of the organization.
Gotcha. So let's talk about content for a moment, just coming back to my favorite thing in the world, content. So that's what we are at Earth Collective, a bit of a content machine. And I've already sung the praises of your Instagram, which just makes me happy every time I look at another video of the snow, because we just don't get snow like that here in the UK. A few months ago, we decided at Earth Collective that, well, it was a few reasons actually, but it's progressed because I've been speaking to Green Pixie. You might have heard the podcast we did on that with John, the CEO of Green Pixie, about digital carbon. But we started understanding the impact of digital carbon a while ago, and we decided to reduce our content output which sounds kind of wild for a publisher, for the carbon footprint of it, but also we wanted to be more authentic. We wanted to produce content that, you know, only put content out there when we thought it was something that our audience would really engage with and resonate with. So, for example, we try to post on our socials only twice a week. We only send out an email once a month, which, yeah, my old e-commerce business clients will probably think that was completely bonkers. I just wondered, I saw you posted something about this on, ironically, on Instagram, about posting less on Instagram. So I wondered what your thoughts were on this, and is it, can it be a less is more kind of situation?
Yes. First of all, thank you so much. As you can tell by looking at my content, right, my purpose is, you know, largely inspired by nature. It's very snowy right now, but, you know, hopefully we have a snowstorm going on today. But hopefully within about a month or so, we'll start to move into that wonderful summer that I talked to you about earlier. You know, so it is very motivating for me to be able to share that content to help people who maybe do live in cities. And you know, there's nothing wrong with living in a city, but maybe they don't get to see sort of that natural beauty as much. And so, you know, that is part of what I'm trying to do, is remind people of what it is we're trying to protect. But second of all, I just want to say that I'm so happy to hear that you decided to reduce your content output. You're so right. If you listen to conventional marketers, they'll tell you to blast your audience constantly, right? They'll tell you that you need to stay in front of your audience as much as possible. And the way to do that is, you know, multiple social media posts per week. Actually, many conventional marketers will say 2 posts a day, which for small and medium sized organizations is just unrealistic. But they'll also say, you know, multiple short emails, right? Every week, keep it short, and it's going to increase, you know, your engagement. But the truth is, nobody likes advertisements, right? It's why people are literally willing to pay for radio and television services that have no ads, right? Over services that have ads, right? People don't like ads. They also hate spam. So, you know, while some people will tolerate ads if they're really quirky or if they're entertaining, you know, they have some sort of entertainment value to them maybe, but they hate spam. And so in today's marketing world, quality over quantity really is key to success. And that is especially true if your marketing, if your target market includes sustainability-minded consumers. In the world of impact marketing, which is actually one of the workshops that I have in the 3P Insights library, I have this whole workshop about, you know, impact marketing. But we call the most conscious consumers LOHAS consumers, those that, you know, are living lifestyles of health and sustainability. And these are the folks that, you know, care about where their products come from, how they're made. You know, they hate the waste that's created when they're done using, you know, a product or something like that. They're the people who are willing to spend time educating themselves before making a purchase and want to see a brand, you know, that helps with that education piece, right? That is transparent. And these are also the folks that are increasingly realizing the impact of their digital carbon footprint. Every social media post that we post, every email we send, every podcast episode has a negative environmental impact associated with it. And in fact, some studies have found that the carbon footprint associated with our internet activities is roughly the size of the carbon footprint of the airline industry. So, you know, it's a big part of the CO2 emissions that are, you know, causing climate disasters. And so if we say that we are a business working towards sustainability, then we need to consider our digital footprint. And, you know, I think this is especially true for businesses that, you know, are e-commerce businesses or online based to start with. And so you talked about the social media example that I had, and I'll let your listeners go ahead and check that out themselves. But I'd also like to talk a little bit about, you know, some, you know, impacts that the research has found. So in that post, I referenced a 2020 study in France, which found that publishing one photo on Instagram, a static post, results in a carbon footprint of about 0.15 grams of CO2 equivalent per minute. And that might not seem like a lot, but multiply that by 1.4 billion active Instagram users, and it adds up quickly.
Wow.
In the right? So, you know, that's a big impact. In the 3P Insights Learning Library, I have an intro to email marketing video tutorial. And in this tutorial, I discuss the basics of, you know, just a strong email marketing campaign. But I also discuss the question of how often should you send an email? And I relate that question back to the carbon footprint associated with email marketing and, of course, how to reduce it. So the footprint of emails can vary dramatically. A study that was conducted by Mike Berners-Lee, who is a fellow at Lancaster University, found that an email with only one photo or a hefty attachment emits as much as 50 grams of CO2 equivalent. Now, it is really hard to measure these, but these are some of the better estimates that, you know, scholars have been able to make. Mm-hmm. Now think about your marketing emails and how many photos you usually have, right? Usually they have several photos.
Yeah. Well, look away, it's cutting away, hasn't it? It's gonna look nice.
Right, yeah, and of course, and I love pictures, right? Yeah. Especially if it's, you know, of nature. And actually experts will tell you that best practice is to include between 3 and 10 images in your email marketing campaign. So even if we're on the low end of that, we have 3. Mm-hmm. But let's say we have an average of 5 images per campaign. Multiply that by 50 grams CO2 equivalent, and we get 250 grams of CO2 equivalent per email. Wow. If we have 100 subscribers, that's 25,000 grams per campaign. And so to put this into perspective, that's roughly the equivalent of driving 60 miles in an average gas-powered passenger vehicle.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, you know, as more and more research is being conducted on the impact, you know, our digital footprint has, this information is being shared with people, right? And especially those low-cost consumers, they're trying to find out what their digital footprint is. And if we're blasting them with emails, you know, 3-4 times a week or every day, which I would never recommend, you know, they're going to unsubscribe. And so I will say, and this is where maybe I'll talk a little bit about my own experience, but I, like you, have reduced my email and social media, you know, campaigns and posting quite a bit. So with social media, I post 2 or 3 times a week, 3 would be the most. And with email, I used to send, you know, several emails a month, and I've decreased that to 1 newsletter per month. So it's just 1 sort of value packed newsletter. And, you know, like you said, experts would say, well, this isn't enough, and it shouldn't, you know, the email shouldn't be very long. But I'll tell you what, from my experience, my open rates have gone up, yeah, my click rates have gone up, my unsubscribes have gone down. And wow. So for my audience, it works. And I imagine that many of your listeners have a similar audience to mine. Yeah. And so, you know, low-cost consumers are really looking for value. And so, you know, I have no interest in wasting their time. And as an educator, I really want to help share valuable information that people, you know, can use to live, work, and do business more sustainably. And it sounds like you're doing the same, and I applaud you for that. I think that is the way forward if we're going to reduce our digital carbon footprint.
Well, thank you so much for the positive feedback on that. It's good to hear. And actually, when we reduced the amount of posts we did, particularly on social, we did see our engagement go up pretty quick, like pretty instantly. So that was amazing. Yeah, I was going to say something else then, but I've lost my train of thought. I got too excited about it. doing the right thing.
Yeah, I wish more people would, you know, sort of decrease that, you know, because it's like when you follow businesses that post every day, it just starts to feel like spam. And there's other ways to stay in front of your audience. So, you know, that's something to consider too.
I've just remembered what I was going to say. I have Google Gmail accounts, and you know that it filters your mail, doesn't it? I don't know if yours does the same into primary, and then you get promotions, and then something else, social. And the number of times I just go in and click select all, delete. I want to sit down and unsubscribe from everything, because I know that even getting an email has a carbon footprint, right? So in real time, in my personal experience, I'm not reading all of those emails that some marketing person somewhere has spent lots of time putting together, and it's going straight into my promotions or my socials folder and then getting select or delete. So that's a waste of carbon and a waste of somebody's time.
Yeah, absolutely. Our efforts could certainly be, you know, put towards better uses. And, you know, the money you'd save by cutting down on some of the spammy marketing is, you know, something that you can put towards some of the things that are needed to maybe become more, you know, environmentally or socially conscious.
So coming back to you, Jennifer, what is it that gets you out of bed in the morning? What drives you every day with all the hundreds of things that you have on your to-do list?
So for me, it's really some, whether it's good or bad, some internal feeling that I want to make a difference, you know, to be a part of something larger than myself. You know, even as a young child, my mom used to record, you know, our whatever we were doing on the weekends or whatever. My mom had a big video camera and she would record it all. And, you know, it's all documented and super fun to watch as an adult. But I would go around, you know, saying I was thinking about conflicts that were going on when I was 4 years old, you know, and I would talk about the need to protect animals. I'm very, very drawn to animals. And so it's just sort of been a part of who I am. I've always had this kind of feeling that I was, you know, it's not just about me, that I'm a part of something larger than myself. And so I've always kind of felt this responsibility towards making the world a better place and helping people. Of course, when I spend time in nature, and, you know, even when I've lived, you know, and traveled abroad and I've seen some of the horrible working conditions that, you know, some people are in many cases forced, you know, to be in, especially in some developing countries, you know, I just, it's a reminder of why we need to continue to make progress. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other thing that goes along with that is, you know, I'm not perfect, right? I don't always choose the most sustainable option. I am one of those who does a lot of research before I buy a product, before I engage in a business partnership, right? A business to business partnership, whether that's, you know, a merchant that I'm working with, whether it's a client, you know, I mean, there, I do a lot of due diligence, but it doesn't always mean that I always make, you know, the perfect choice. And I think that, you know, when you live in a world where you don't have to see the direct consequences of your buying choices or your choices more broadly, it can be easy to forget that there's a cost associated with every purchase we make, especially, you know, if it's a cheap purchase. And, you know, I've made a lot of progress in terms of this, and I know a lot of others have too, right? We have this amazing community of conscious business owners and just, you know, people who are trying to live more consciously. But, you know, I think that we have to forgive ourselves when we maybe make the wrong choice. And also remember that, you know, our systems aren't necessarily set up to support sustainable living, you know, and sustainable business at the moment. Mm.
So true. And you just reminded me as well of something I said right at the beginning of this chat, which was about politicians in cities not being in nature and that impacting on the decisions they make. But also me saying that is a really privileged thing for me to say, because I'm very lucky that I get to live in the very close to the countryside and the ocean. And some people don't have that opportunity. And it's the same thing with what you're saying there about this kind of blinkered view we can have on the world where we get a product. It's like the same with animal products, right? You don't know, don't acknowledge what's happened to feed you or for that product to get to you. And we can just ignore it unless once you've overturned that first stone, you don't ignore it anymore. But yeah, that's a really interesting point. And I just wanted to acknowledge that both of those situations, you know, being in nature and having products and not being able to see where they've come from is a very privileged point of view and a very privileged position to be in. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And that's something that when I talk with sort of in the broader community, so maybe not necessarily with business owners, although it certainly would be important for business owners to keep in mind, is that, you know, right now, the sustainable choice is often more expensive. Mm-hmm. And not everybody has the means or the resources to, you know, engage in that kind of buying behavior. And, and so there's a really important access piece, I think, that is a part of sustainability, which I think fits into that sort of inclusion, you know, piece, and understanding that many times people in this space are talking from a point of privilege. Mm. So we have to figure out a way to make the sustainable option the easy option, mm, and make it more accessible for everyone. Mm. And I think that's why I love sustainable business so much, is because business is the one who provides a lot of that stuff for people. And the more and more businesses that choose the sustainable option, right, there's an economies of scale piece to it. And so the more that are doing it, the easier it gets, the less costly it gets to produce that stuff, and the more accessible it will be for everyone.
That's a brilliant segue to my last question for you today, which is what we ask all our guests on this podcast. And that is, do you think there is such a thing as a truly sustainable business yet? And I think I know what your answer is going to be.
It's probably similar to most of the answers you get on this podcast. You know, I think the short answer is no, right? I think that, you know, one challenge, like we've already mentioned, that businesses face is the affordability piece or lack thereof, you know, for sustainable options. You know, for example, if I produce a t-shirt, it's going to be more expensive to source organic cotton or textiles produced from recycled materials. And, you know, as more and more businesses do this type of sourcing, the costs will come down. But right now, it simply is more expensive to produce a t-shirt sustainably. Mm-hmm. To add to the costs, in holistic sustainability, we also look at, you know, labor practices involved with producing that t-shirt. And the goal is, of course, that labor is paid a living wage and treated well. But again, there is a cost associated to that. And so if you're producing a t-shirt in, say, you know, the United States or the UK, right, you can certainly embrace, you know, a holistic, sustainable value chain, but it is going to cost more. And when you're competing against companies that aren't doing that, and that could be in the US or the UK, or it could be in any part of the world, right? Theirs is going to be cheaper. And we still have this, you know, intention and action gap in sustainable, you know, development, where if I ask someone, right, if I go into my, you know, circle of friends, or if I do a survey as a researcher, right, and I ask people on the street, you know, would you prefer to buy a product that is produced in a socially and environmentally conscious way? Most people will say yes, right? Mm-hmm. And I think some of the data shows between, you know, 75% and 85% of people will say yes. But when you look at their actions at the checkout line, mm-hmm, they don't always do that. And so there's a lot of businesses that I work with who will say, you know, we want to pay our labor more. We want to, you know, give more benefits, right, to the people working for us. And these are businesses that maybe already are treating their labor better than others. But, you know, they say, we want to, you know, include organic cotton and have our whole line be organic cotton, right, or whatever it is. But there just simply aren't enough people buying it for us to stay in business if we do it. And so I think there's, you know, that intention action gap that prevents some businesses from fully, you know, committing to sustainability. But like I mentioned earlier, our systems also aren't really set up to support sustainable business practices. You know, for example, if a business wants to be powered by renewable energy, there may not be options available in their region. There are some energy companies that are making it a possibility to be completely, you know, 100% clean energy powered or even renewable energy powered. But there are some companies, right, or energy providers that aren't doing that everywhere. And so, you know, if a business doesn't have that option, you need power. Right? You need power to live. You need power to function as a business. And so if you, your only option might to be, you know, reduce your energy as much as you can and offset. But offsetting, of course, comes with its own warranted criticisms. So I would say that to answer your question, right, there are very few, if any, truly sustainable businesses right now, but there are loads of businesses that are making incremental improvements to operate more sustainably. And that's what we need. You know, we don't need perfection. We need progress. And so, you know, sustainability is about producing our products in a way that minimizes environmental, social, and economic harm while creating prosperity in a healthy environment that can be enjoyed for generations to come. And I think there are a lot of businesses that are making those improvements. And that's what we need.
That is the most perfect place to end this conversation today. Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. I have learned so much from you today. It's been a wonderful, I love this podcast because I get to meet and talk with people like yourself. So thank you so much for your time, Jennifer.
Thank you so much, Charlie. It was absolutely my pleasure to be here today.
Thank you so much for joining me for today's episode. I hope it has been useful and at least a little inspiring to your own sustainable business journey. I will put the links to Jennifer's social media and her website in the show notes so you can head along and find out even more about Jennifer and her work. This podcast episode is also available as a written article on weareearthcollective.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, I would so appreciate a follow, a subscribe, or even a 5-star review, because that helps people just like you and me to discover this podcast and we can help even more people learn some lessons in sustainable business. If you'd like to get in touch with me about this episode, or if you have ideas for a future one, you can do that by following at We Are Earth Co. That's all one word, at We Are Earth Co. on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or TikTok. I hope you can join me for the next episode, which will be in a couple of weeks. Until then, stay collected and don't forget to keep it green.